From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we got a busy night ahead of us tonight. I thought I'd bring on Clint Van Zandt to start with, and we're going to talk about several different cases. Starting out with this, have you heard this case out of Richmond, California, about the gang rape of a 15-year-old student, allegedly witnessed by 20 people, five people arrested? It's bizarre, to say the least, and it's always great to have Clint on. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening, Dana. Good to be with you.
This is quite the story. It's not the first time we've heard of something like this. The famous New York case is, many years ago is one of them. But here we go, 15 years old at a school dance, and I'll let you take it from there.
Yeah, and I think this is one more challenge that we're seeing just in society in general now. You know, you alluded to other cases that we've seen in the past. I mean, you and I can probably go back to Bedford, Massachusetts, a bar there in 1983 where several men grabbed a woman and threw her on a pool table, and she was gang raped on a pool table.
Yep.
While other people hooped and hollered in the background. I mean, there was... So this type of behavior, as you know, where this young high school girl was allegedly gang raped by multiple young men over a similar type period of time, this type of behavior is not new. But I think what's challenging for most of us is that it still continues. That there is this. And again, we can't lay it at the feet of this New Bedford, Massachusetts situation in 1983, but now we see that the role of women is just so minimized. We mm-hmm. see songs, we see other type of activities where women are put down. And my fear always, Dana, is that there is a certain segment of society that believes what they hear when a rap song suggests that a woman should be raped. That subliminal message is that men have control over women and can do what they want to do. And then we get this kind of when Christ is crucified and people are standing there and they want Barabbas to be loose, let loose and go ahead and crucify Christ. There's this gang mentality that's been with us since the beginning of time that said, if it's just one-on-one, one person might intervene. You might say, hey, don't do this. But if you see a gang of people either robbing or beating or, in this case, raping, that number impacts on, I think, just the decency judgment on the part of many people, and especially the young witnesses there who stood there and not only just allowed it to go on, but no one took the time to just, punch in 911 yeah. on the ever-present cell phone. So to me, it's a limited indictment on society that many people are willing to stand by and watch while this goes on, whether it's in New York City in that famous knifing where the woman was killed, or whether mm-hmm. it was in Massachusetts, or whether now in California.
Yeah, you're right. Clint Van Zandt's here. And it's that ideology, Clint, of either, like you say, the MTV generation, the rock videos, the Hollywood, the internet is one for sure. But I bring it up to also consequences. You see in cases like this, especially with young people, the old adage of you do the crime, you do the time is thrown out the window. We seem to be more of a rehabilitative society. And a lot of these kids go out and they do this kind of violence and this sort of tragedy as far as the victim's perspective, because they know they might just get away with it.
And I think that's part of it, too, that we say, well, they're youthful offenders. And, they don't know what they're doing. Well, hey, if you're participating in a rape, if you're watching a rape and allowing it to go on without trying to intervene whatsoever, and yet there will people who say, well, wait a minute, I've heard of individuals who've been beaten, who've been murdered just recently because they do intervene. Well, you know, somehow each of us in society has got to be able to draw that line and say that this is behavior that's so beyond what is acceptable that if I cannot intervene myself, the very least I can do is step away and even make the anonymous 911 call and say, you know, there's a woman who needs help. Now, there are some greater aspects of this story. As you recall, this is where the rape took place. It was at a school while there was a dance going on.
Yep.
But as the authorities, the investigators who were involved, as they talk about the case, it is a little bit removed from the school itself. To get to this area, you had to climb over the top of a fence. There was no adequate security lighting there. So, you know, the last thing you ever want to do is indict a victim, because in this case, we don't know. Maybe she was carried to that location, too. But it looks like she may have innocently agreed to walk with someone or go with someone. And then whether this whole thing was a plot against this young woman or whether it's something that just took place extemporaneously, you know, society itself has to start bearing responsibility. But there's got to be, as you say, individual responsibilities. And we have to hold people responsible, whether we're 16 or 26 or 36. If we're participating in something like this, that everything in us says that's wrong and we know it's wrong, if we still either participate or if we're a willing observer, there ought to be some fee that society charges us.
Yep.
And instead of an admittance fee, it ought to be something within the criminal justice system, because after all, many times the criminal justice system is a deterrent. It's there to deter people from doing something. And we have to make examples of people who do this. Otherwise, it sounds like it's open season on women.
Yeah, Clint Van Zandt is here. And, you know, again, and I've said this many times, Clint, all you have to do is turn the TV on with the 24/7 cable news society that we have today. We see all these tragic stories, maybe some that we've never, you know, wouldn't have heard of before many years ago. Summer Thompson, a 7-year-old from murdered in Florida. That's a tragedy. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and this is yet one more tragedy. I think most people have been following the abduction and then the subsequent finding of the body of Summer Thompson, as you indicate, this 7-year-old girl. And what's challenging on this, notwithstanding that someone would kill a 7-year-old child, unfortunately we've seen too much of that across this country and across the world. What's challenging for me, Dana, on an investigative point, is the very narrow window of opportunity that an assailant would have had to have gotten to this little girl. As the story goes, she and her two siblings and some other children walk about a mile from the grade school, in this case, to Summer Thompson's home. As they leave the school, they're a couple hundred yards away from the school. The 7-year-old has some type of an argument. She gets angry or she's upset, so she runs ahead of the group still in the direction of her home. Well, the last time she's seen is a little 9-year-old boy sees her running past this kind of burned out house, a house that had a fire in the neighborhood. He sees her in front of the house. That's the last time she's seen. When the siblings of this of Summer Thompson get home, she's not there. Contact is made with the biological mother at work. The mother comes home, waves down a deputy sheriff, and the investigation is on. But, Dana, it looks like the window of opportunity from the time Summer got out of sight of her, of the group she was with, and the time that group got home, that couldn't be more than, you know, on the short side, 5 minutes, on the long side, maybe 15 minutes. So that suggests to me it's either some terribly unfortunate, fortuitous situation where, and I've seen it, where an unknown, where a predator just happens to be there and he just happens to see a victim and he just happens to take her at that time. But more often, your experience and mine at least, is that you see a child like this, perhaps there's been some type of stalking activity. Mm-hmm. It's either a neighbor or it's a workman or it's somebody who has reason to be in that neighborhood. Look, to grab that little girl in that 5 to 15 minute window of opportunity. And then, as you know, she was murdered. Her body was dumped in a dumpster. That load of trash moved once and moved a second time up to Georgia. And it was just some sharp deputy who, instead of following the money, he chose to follow the trash and was able to find that victim's body. But all of that, Dana, all of that leads me back to say, that's somebody in the neighborhood, that's somebody who knows the victim, that's somebody who had reason to be in that neighborhood. I find a hard time believing that some predator just happened. I mean, that's like two stars crossing in space, yeah, that a predator would happen to be there at the one time that she was a few dozen steps in front of her peers. And that's where I think law enforcement has been centering their investigation, number one, in that neighborhood, who would have had that potential access to the victim. And, you know, our mutual experience is that it's a two-track investigation. Track number one says it's somebody, some predator in a neighborhood, somebody who saw the little girl, or number two said it could even be closer. We know, for example, that the mother was separated from the biological father. There was a boyfriend in the situation who we haven't heard much of. What we've been told is that law enforcement has been able to exclude, depending on whose number you believe, somewhere between 80 or 90 or up to 150 registered sex offenders in that neighborhood, that they evidently have been able to establish the whereabouts of them. I mean, Dana, within a 5-mile radius, 150 plus or minus registered sex offenders, any one of which potentially could have been capable of committing a crime like this. This is something that it looks like it's going to come down to a CSI type of case, that because that sharp deputy sheriff said, let's follow the trash, they were able to find that victim's body in that landfill. The FBI evidence response team came in and recovered the victim's body, fully clothed, it appeared, as well as other potential items of evidence. So if there was any type of transference between the killer and the victim, be that hairs, fibers, semen, saliva, anything from the vehicle itself, you know, we've got four crime scenes here. We've got potential crime scenes. We got where the victim was recovered, of course, and then we go back to where she was originally taken, and we go back to where she was assaulted, and then what means was used to transport her body to the dumpster. So it looks like law enforcement has only found one of four potential crime scenes. So they still have a lot of work to do. But, Dana, this is, you know, this just sends absolute chills through, yep, any community. When our weakest, when our most vulnerable are taken like this, just snatched out of thin air, we know that if an offender could do it once, he or she or they could do it again. And I think this community has a right to be frightened until this person is found and gotten off the street.
Absolutely. Like you say, 150 registered sex offenders in a 5-mile radius makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Absolutely.
You know, Clint Van Zandt's here, a retired FBI agent, author, security expert. Has a great article on Newsvine about the Morgan Harrington, the missing Virginia Tech co-ed, went to a concert and hasn't been seen of or heard from since. Another sad missing persons case, Clint.
Yeah, and another window of opportunity case one more time, Dana. As most know that this young 20-year-old college student, she attends Virginia Tech. She went to Charlottesville, Virginia, to the University of Virginia to attend a Metallica concert on October 17th. Now, Dana, this is something she had planned on going to for at least 6 months. She had her tickets taped to the side of a refrigerator 6 months in advance, and she had a group of about 9 or 10 friends. They were all going together. I mean, she spent her entire day of the concert deciding what she was going to wear. I mean, this was the event of the year for her. Now, let's then go to the concert. She carpools with her friends. Everybody gets in a car. They drive to the concert. They all go in. They've all got the golden ticket, you know, so you can sit. You've got a numbered seat. Everybody sits down. The warm-up bands are in there, and they're playing. But Metallica hasn't even come in yet, And all of a sudden, Morgan Harrington, she stands up and she says, "You know, I got to go to the bathroom." And what, you know, it sounds sexist, but number one, she goes by herself. Most of us, you know, our experience is that usually two girls, two women, yeah, will go to the restroom. It's kind of a social thing. And number two, it's just a smart safety thing to do. But for whatever the reason, she gets up, and now, Dana, there's 16 to 18 women's restrooms within that concert facility, and somehow she winds up going to an exit gate instead, where a security guard says, "Hey, lady, if you go out, you can't get back in, no matter what." She chooses, Dana, to go outside and realize the warm-up bands are still playing. Metallica hasn't come on yet, and now she has left the venue, and she has no chance to get back in again. So she's outside around, 8:20, 8:30. She's circling around the arena. At about 8:45, one of her friends calls her and says, "Hey, you know, where are you?" She says, "You know, I'm outside. I can't get back in. If I don't get in, I'll find my own way home." So now she's seen again, allegedly by witnesses, walking through different parking lots. She's last seen about 9:30 as she's going over a bridge somewhat near, but she's walked a distance away. Realize she's been walking at least an hour now. And Dana, that's the last time she's seen. And somewhere along this route, number one, she gets some type of facial injury. Witnesses say they saw her and there was something on her face, not severe, but it looked like she had fallen down, she had scratched herself, she had cut herself. We know that her purse had been recovered in an adjacent parking lot. Her cell phone was found with the battery missing. Mm-hmm. Now, state police said, well, they could have just accidentally fell out. But you and I know there's enough stories in the media about how law enforcement follows the ping of a cell phone off a cell tower to find out where that phone is.
Yep.
And there's been enough said that if you take that battery out, that it can't be followed, that That battery came out for one of three reasons. Number one, it was an accident like the state police said it might have been. Number two, it was some assailant, some kidnapper who took it out and just threw it down knowing that it couldn't be followed. Or number three, and this is something law enforcement has to consider, like the case of the runaway bride a few years ago. Could this young woman, could she have something going on in her life that was such a challenge that she made a decision she just wanted to drop out, she wanted to get away for a while, and her emotional way of doing it was to make it perhaps look like she had been the victim of some type of abduction, and this purse and the cell phone and everything else was a red herring. And now, just like Jennifer Wilbanks, the runaway bride a couple of years ago, who wound up in New Mexico, and who said, "Hey, I'd been kidnapped and I'd been taken out of here." Well, of course, law enforcement found out that wasn't true. She had just made it up. But Jennifer Wilbanks' challenge was, gee, now that the whole world's looking for me, how do I resurface? And that's one thing that law enforcement has to consider in the case of this missing co-ed, Morgan Harrington, again. Was she a victim of somebody she knew? Was she a victim of some unknown offender, or was she a victim of herself?
Yeah, and it will be interesting, but I want to end up with you, Clint, just briefly, and you can find out more information from Clint's website at livesecure.org. You know, a rock concert venue like that, you know, a state fair, whatever, they're just being trolled and swarmed by these predators, these kidnappers, if this is what's happened in this case. And I want you to go over just a couple of safety tips for those that do attend these sorts of venues and these events.
And I think that's so important to do, because most of us remember when we were 18, 19, 20, 21, we thought we were bulletproof. You know, mm-hmm. We thought we had Kevlar body armor on all the time and that nobody could hurt us. And the reality is, of course, they can, and we really are vulnerable at that age. Number one, I think that Morgan Harrington made a classic error. She didn't remember the lesson that Tom Cruise taught us all in the movie Top Gun, when he was that naval aviator, fighter pilot. And mm-hmm. In that movie, the one thing that stuck with me, he said, is that you never leave your wingman.
Yep.
You never leave your wingman. And I think that's important for personal safety, that we always need to be accountable for somebody and have somebody accountable for us. And when you get in a venue like this, where you know there's drugs and rock and roll and the potential for predators and others out there, you always need to have at least one other person with you. Had she, for example, gone to the restroom with one other woman, there would have been someone else there responsible. Number two, there's always the potential somebody could have slipped her some type of drug, a roofer, a date rape drug, or something like that. So whenever you're in these venues, you only drink either what you brought or you drink out of a sealed container. You don't drink out of a punch bowl. You don't let somebody give you a glass and you don't know where that glass has come from, because you've got a 50-50 chance in some venues, at least, as perhaps happened in Natalie Holloway in Aruba, that someone could slip you some type of a date rape drug in that. You know, your cell phone is something you always want to have. You always want to be in contact with people. And you have to realize, as you said, Dana, that there are predators in these type of venues. There are people that, like the proverbial lion, sitting there watching this herd of gazelle go by and looking for the gazelle that looks weak or that's a little bit away from the herd or looks like they've been injured. That's the one the lion goes for. Well, human predators do the same thing. If they can cut one person out of a group, out of a crowd, get them by themselves, we become vulnerable, then we become the target for attack. If we know these things when we go to these type of venues, we're aware of these things, I think we've got a much, much better chance of not becoming a victim of someone else.
Well said. Thank you, Clint.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That's Clint Van Zandt, and you can learn more about him and go to his going to his website at www.livesecure.org and check out his articles on Newsvine. He's an expert. He's been there a long time, former FBI agent. You know, I was watching a documentary on MSNBC. I hate their politics, but I do like their documentaries on David Koresh, and every time I see that Looney Tune at Waco, I think of Clint because he actually negotiated with them. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, you'll know my next guest as a investigative reporter, producer. Worked with Nancy Grace, Greta Van Susteren, Good Morning America, and now freelancing, out doing what he loves to do. He's a Canadian, too. I always like to tease him about that because so am I. Steph Watts, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Nice having you. Check out Steph's link to his webpage and his blog. I like the blog, Watts, up with this. Making news and breaking news. And I want to start with the story that I actually just talked to Clint Van Zandt about, the guest that was on just before you. We're talking about this 15-year-old in Richmond, California, the alleged gang rape, the 20 or so witnesses that sat back and watched, allegedly, taking pictures with their cell phone. And I got to ask your thoughts both as a, you know, as a human being and as a reporter. I know there's a difference in the two. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. About this story, and let's get into it.
Sure. Well, I've been candid in my opinion about this case from the beginning, and I've compared this to how we covered the Balloon Boy case.
Yeah.
I was concerned about the coverage on the Balloon Boy incident from the beginning. I felt like there was a problem with this case. There was something wrong with the story. The problem with the media is they weren't asking the right questions. And I felt the same way about the case of the rape case in California. I think that the media went into this case not asking the right questions, and I still don't think we're asking the right questions. We're all, you know, this is a horrific crime. A girl was allegedly gang raped for 2.5 hours outside her high school dance while more than 20 people looked on. Whatever the incident is, whatever happened in this case, it's horrific. What I can't understand is how a crime can be committed for 2.5 hours. 20 people could watch a crime and no one does anything. If that's true, if that's the case, if we proceed with this at trial and the facts come out in this case, and that's exactly what happened, I'm astounded. For 10 years in this business as a investigative producer and reporter, I can't believe that nobody had the guts to step up and step in on this crime. So I'm just a little bit concerned as to the girl's involvement. I don't want to bash the victim, But it's just, I still have a lot of questions unanswered in this case.
Yeah, and it speaks to society. It speaks to conscience. It speaks to responsibility. And you have to wonder, and I know your reporter, Spider Sense, is making you ask the right questions, because you're right. You look at Balloon Boy. You look at John Mark Carr, for example. Mm-hmm. And you look at other cases that you and I could do a whole other show about, where the media has jumped to a conclusion, so to speak, without, like Jack Webb used to say on Dragnet, getting all the facts. You have to wonder about this one.
Sure.
For sure.
As I reported on my blog, I did a case comparison a couple weeks ago. There was a case in here in New York City. Young girl came forward, said she was raped at a college function in a college bathroom. The five men were arrested, dragged to the media, dragged through the mud. Well, as soon as the girl found out that there was videotapes of the incident, oh, she changed her story. I'm sorry, it wasn't rape. It was consensual. So I'm not saying, again, in this California case, that's what happened. But there's another example of how we in the media falsely, we didn't ask the right questions. You know, we tried these guys. They were guilty, these young boys. However, their actions were inappropriate. I think five men, college men, having sex with one woman in a college bathroom is completely inappropriate behavior.
You're
regardless
right.
of how you look at the situation. It's inappropriate. However, in that case, it was consensual. So I did a case comparison to that case. And there was also another case that just came out where the young woman said she was raped. I think it was in Washington. And she's now come forward years later after the men have been done time in prison and said, you know what, I made the story up. It wasn't true.
If you want to check out Steph's blog site, and I encourage you to, and leave comments, go to http://stephww, so that's steph.wordpress.com, and you'll see these stories. You know, and we're going to get on to some other stories here in just a minute or two, Steph, but, you know, your work with Nancy Grace, Greta, and others, and all the work that you've done, like you say, for all the years that you've been involved in this, have you seen a change in the ideology of cable news coverage when it comes to high-profile cases like this? You know, the old adage, if it bleeds, it leads, seems to be even more prevalent today, and we're getting these sorts of Balloon Boy stories and all this other nonsense that's out there.
Well, going back to the Balloon Boy story, I feel like in that case, that they went into this situation, they made up this story looking for fame and fortune.
Yep.
What have we given them in the media? We've given them fame and fortune.
Yeah.
We've given them what they want. As far as I'm concerned, they basically have their own reality show every night on Headline News at 8 o'clock because Nancy Grace continues to do the story every night. So we've given them what they want. There was, however lascivious or however, you think about what they did, let's move on. This was not that serious of a crime. A sensational situation? Yes, I agree. However, there's much more serious issues we could be covering. However, night after night after night, we return to Balloon Boy. We return to the video of the baby holding the beer bottle, the video of the baby holding the cigar, the same sound bites. It's like, we need to ask ourselves in the media, what good are we doing? There's thousands and thousands of missing cases. We've got wars happening overseas.
Yep.
There's a recession happening here. There's so many other stories that we could, if we were smart, we could cover from an interesting angle and make it interesting to viewers. Yet we choose to, revisit the same stories night after night.
Yeah,
we need to ask ourselves, what good are we doing?
Yeah, you're right. And I've seen the change, and it's become worse and worse. And if it isn't either right-wing, left-wing, or completely wing-nut politics, and it's the same sort of crap over and over again. And the stories that we're missing, the stories that are important that are out there, and another one, I guess, I just talked to Clint Van Zandt about, and I want to talk to you about, is the Summer Thompson case. Again, a tragedy, but very poorly reported on television.
Yeah, and I understand the obsession or the interest in the Summer Thompson case. It's every parent's worst nightmare. It's every neighborhood's worst nightmare. It's every community's worst nightmare. We've got an abductor and a killer still on the loose.
Yeah.
What's fascinating about the Summer Thompson story, I think, is if you look at it from this way, is was Summer Thompson specifically targeted? Was the predator just looking for a child that day? And I think that's going to have a lot to, if this person is caught and brought to justice, it's going to have a lot to do with how they're charged. Was she specifically targeted, or did she just happen to wander away from the group of kids and he was watching the entire group of kids and he just happened to grab her? I mean, I understand the obsession with that because, A, there's many unanswered questions, and, B, we still have a killer on the loose.
You know, when I interviewed Mark Lunsford just shortly after his daughter died and in Cooey and that whole case, he said to me, Dana, he said, I never thought that I could look out my window and have to suspect the person across the street or across the alley or across whatever. 150 registered sex offenders within a five-mile radius of the residence. What the hell's gone on with society today?
You know, it's unbelievable when you the internet, we have the ability to, check out registered sex offenders in all our neighborhoods, which I encourage everybody to do.
Yep.
I think what's happening, especially in this particular case, is, we're now in a society where we have reality television. You know, every day we're brought into lives of people, doing different things, various things. You know, Kate and John plus 8, or Kate and John minus 8, I guess it is at this point, and Octomom, and all these different shows. So now when we cover crime and justice from the same angle and we're brought into these stories in the same way, we feel like we have this right to be there. And I think what's interesting is now this plays out like a soap opera and we're waiting for the next chapter. And, you've got all these people in the neighborhood pointing fingers at each other. Did you do it? Did you do it? Who did it? Was it John down the street? Was it this person? You feel for this neighborhood. You feel for this family. But yet all of us feel like we have a right to be in these stories and wait night after night for the news to break. And we want to know exactly what happened as it happened.
Steph Watts is here. We're talking high-profile cases, and I encourage you to check out his webpage and his blog. Just click on the link in our show notes. You've been doing some work here recently, and you talk about it on your blog with a person who I have a huge amount of respect for. I've interviewed him probably 20 times or more on my program, Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch. We need more Tim Millers in this world today. Talk about the work you've been doing, in particular with the Cummings case.
Sure. I think, it's been an interesting situation. Tim's come under attack lately in the work that he's done and what he's tried to do to bring justice to that case. People need to remember that Tim Miller's daughter was murdered.
Yep.
He's the victim of a murdered child who's never been brought to justice. The person who killed Tim's daughter, they've never found him. So Tim's life has been devoted to helping other families. He's come into all these cases and going back to what we just talked about, Tim's been thrown into this media machine as well. Tim wants to come in, help these families, find these missing children, find these missing bodies, dead or alive, and move on to the next case and bring justice to these families. He's been thrown into this media machine, and I think the Haley Cummings case and the Casey Anthony case has been really trying on him. I think what he tried to do in the Haley Cummings case was do whatever he had to do to find this child. Now, if you go back to what happened in another case in Florida, which was a Trenton Duckett case, who was, if you remember that situation, a young mother, Melinda Duckett, appeared on Nancy Grace, was very distraught. She ended up by killing herself. When Melissa Duckett died, any chances of finding Trenton Duckett died with her. What Tim was trying to do in the case of Haley Cummings, he felt that Misty Cummings was in a very volatile situation. He felt she was in danger. What he tried to do was remove her from that situation, keep her in a safe environment, and keep her talking so the information she could get out there would help police. Whether it be she contradicted previous stories she had told, which is exactly what happened, or she did a confession to somebody, which didn't happen. But that sort of put Tim outside of his work as a search and rescue person. So he funded and financed getting Misty out of a safe environment through one of his volunteers, and he did whatever he had to do to keep her safe and keep her away from Satsuma, Florida.
You know, and when you look at that case and you wonder about, Nancy Grace and the Duckett case, and in particular Kaylee Anthony, and the beating up that Tim Miller received, especially in the Anthony case, I remember that very clearly, with all of, the Cindy Anthony, who I interviewed, bizarre, and Padilla the bounty hunter, and all that sort of stuff. It makes you wonder how someone like Tim Miller, with a volunteer organization as a victim himself continues to go on, or does any? He'll continue to go on until he's 6 feet under. I know he's told me that. But why he does any media now is beyond me, because he has been lambasted on it, not my show, but some other shows, and it must be terribly disappointing for him.
Yeah, Tim and I have talked about it. You know, it's no secret that Tim and I have a friendship that goes way back. I've worked with Tim since my days back at Court TV for the last 10 years. And you know, look, I'll be the first one to admit, you know, Tim's not perfect. I'm not perfect. But I know, you know, I don't hitch my my wagon to inappropriate train, so to speak. And I think Tim has a good heart. Yeah. I understand what he's trying to do with his organization. Tim is, I don't think he's gets himself in front of them. He could be in front of those cameras every night if he chooses to be. That doesn't interest him. Tim's mission, and he set out to do this, was the fact that no one helped him when his daughter went missing.
Yeah.
He begged and pleaded for people to help them find his daughter. Nobody helped him, and he swore that he would continue to help other families, and that's what he's done. But through that process, he's fallen into this whole, you know, the reality TVing or the Nancy Gracing of the news, I call it. Mm-hmm. And it's a difficult, you know, waters to maneuver yourself through and try to continue to do your work. But I think he does it well, and I think he continues to do a great job. And he's got a great organization. And yeah. Tim will be the first one for you if your family's missing or if you're trying to have an old case solved. And you know, I mean, I can't say enough good things about him, and we'll continue to say that in the future.
Absolutely, I agree totally. Steph Watts is here, and a comment from a listener. Steph, it says that you make a good point about the news. It says, however, we on the Internet do cover it in a unique and interesting way. Mainstream media has become lazy. How is it that the bloggers can cover more than one story at a time? But like you say, I love that Nancy Gracing of the news that you can hear about Balloon Boy over and over and over again.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I think that the person who wrote that in has an interesting point. We're at a very dangerous crossroads in the media, because exactly what they said, the media's become lazy. You know, we pull a lot of stories off the AP, and also we've got a lot of false stories out there because of the speed at which stuff can be reported over the Internet, the blogs, the iPhones, the iReports. Mm-hmm. The information is coming in so quickly, and you combine it with the fact that the media has become lazy. We don't ask the right questions anymore. We don't dig. We take stuff at face value. So when you combine those two elements, it's very dangerous time for us. And people at home are smarter, thankfully. And that's my one thankful.
Well, yeah. And
at home can sit back and people at home need to start asking the questions. You guys need to, you know, write into CNN, write into Fox, write into my blog, write into the other blogs and say, I don't agree with this. I think this is wrong. And that's the only saving grace, that we have this two-way communication now out there.
Absolutely. You are absolutely right when it comes to that. But you know, and I'm going to leave you with the last word, it seems that we have these stories and we want people to contact the networks and tell them because, yes, they are interested. But then again, they're also interested in Octomom and John Goslin and all the same sort of crazy stuff. So it becomes from an absolute caring about a case to just a fascination about craziness. And where do you draw the line between the two?
Are you asking me that question? Are you making that statement?
I'm making the statement. I want you to comment on it.
Yeah, I think it's frustrating for me, and I think it's frustrating for all of us. And I think it's a fine line between, you know, reporting on what's interesting and then becoming obsessed with stories to the point of reporting on stuff when there's no news. I mean, I think that's the problem that we're at right now in my business is, you know, when do we stop reporting this story? You know, and here's what goes on behind the scenes, which a lot of people don't know. We look at the ratings every night. And if we talked about Octomom last night and we got a huge rating, then you know what? We're going to talk about Octomom again tonight, whether or not there's anything to talk about. It doesn't matter, because what matters is we're going to get ratings. And that's what's sad. And that's what I love about the new medium, which the blog radio, like what you're on, the internet radio, the blogs, is now there's a little bit of competition coming up, because now there's a forum for us to talk about specific stories with a specific interest, and people can react specifically. So you know what? Let's give the networks news a run for their money.
You're right. Absolutely. Steph Watts, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
That's Steph Watts. He worked with Nancy Grace and Greta Van Susteren, Good Morning America, and now he's out on his own. I agree with him on some things. I disagree with him on others. But go to his webpage and click on the link on the show notes, StephWattsReporter.com. And go on his blog and make comments if you agree or disagree. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. I'm going to share with you some information I received, and then we'll get into our next segment, is nothing but the Sack segment with Robin Sachs and our special guest, Kathy Harper-Lee, from she's executive director, I'm stumbling here, for the Justice League of Ohio, but I want to share this with you first. A young mother is currently in jail for protecting her 5-year-old daughter because the justice system won't. Ms. Cherish Lewis was found in contempt of court on July 24, 2009 by a domestic relations court, ordered for not turning over her daughter to the child's father. The court ordered Ms. Lewis to remain in jail until she turns over the child. Ms. Lewis is not telling anyone the location of her child, and now she's been in the county jail for over 3.5 months. More times than most criminals spend in jail, there's allegations that she's not sane because her partner, who is an abuser. We've heard these stories over and over again, and I think it's another one that we certainly need to talk about. Kathy Harper-Lee, the executive director for the Justice League of Ohio, and Robin Sachs, welcome. I want to start with you, Kathy. Welcome back to the show. It's been about 3 years since you and I've talked.
Yes, it is, and thank you very much for having me today.
You know, it's usually I have guests on more often than that, but 3 years ago we were talking about a dopey judge. This time we're going to talk about this Jalen Rice Lewis case. Tell us about it.
Well, this case, as I see it after bringing the case in, reviewing all of the facts, the evidence, testimony in the case, there seemed to be the primary problem seemed to be with law enforcement agencies in two different states, one of which closed the case without interviewing the child and seems that have not conducted a thorough investigation, and law enforcement in Tampa, Florida, who has indicated that they haven't even received the case, and now after being forwarded all of the medical evidence, all of the testimony, substantiations from Children's Services of sexual abuse, alleging the father as the perpetrator and recommending that the child be separated. But they're still delaying moving forward with an investigation. Second is a judge that has heard testimony from law enforcement regarding physical abuse, has seen medical reports indicating both physical and sexual abuse, heard from the child's guardian ad litem, who testified that the child demonstrated that her father rubbed her genital area in a circular motion, heard testimony from Children's Services that substantiating both physical and sexual abuse on two separate occasions, and recommended the child be separated from the father until investigation can be completed or the father take a lie detector test, but yet the judge continues to order the child go back with the father. And lastly, the fact that Mrs. Lewis's attorney represented the father in a previous criminal matter regarding allegations of sexually abusing another 4-year-old child and did not disclose this to Ms. Lewis, which obviously is a serious conflict of interest and could also lend to the difficulties that this mother has had with the court in trying to protect her child. So those are the primary problems as I see them. Where would you like to start?
Well, I'm going to turn it over to Robin right now for a minute. Robin Sachs, former sex crimes prosecutor, TV commentator, author. Now, when you see a case like this, Robin, and of course there's been allegations made about the mother too, where do you draw the line? How do you put the puzzle together that is all jumbled up right now, where the evidence is pointing towards the dad, but the court just doesn't seem to get it?
Well, probably the most greatly misunderstood aspect in all sexual assault is the relationship that the family court, DCFS, and the DAs or investigating officers all have together. So right. The lack of coordination and the way this case is just kind of blowing up in a lot of different directions has to do with this belief and prejudice towards people who have had a divorce or some sort of what appears to be a family law case. People somehow, you know, deem that a weak case or having some sort of motivation. But you can have that even be a little prejudice and predisposed to worry about that. But in this case, it is so blatantly obvious and horrendous how many crimes against this child. And you said it probably most accurately in, you know, this woman's been in custody for 90 days. That's more time than people who have been convicted of misdemeanors spend on any, you know, misdemeanor domestic violence cases. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. But there needs to be something done.
You know, there's a difference, Kathy, between the power of a court and what's right and what's responsible and what the evidence shows. In cases like this, and I've covered several of them, it seems like the right hand is arguing with the left hand. The right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. And then all of a sudden the feet get involved and everything gets jumbled up. And the true victim is the child and, in this case, probably the mother who's sitting in county jail. Your thoughts?
Well, yeah, the true victim is the child and now the mother. This case overall is an absolute travesty of justice. It's a nightmare for the child. It's a nightmare for the mother. It's a nightmare for her entire family. And what's particularly outrageous is the court has heard testimony throughout these proceedings. The court has heard testimony from law enforcement about the abuses, the bruises, all over this child's body, from her ear to her neck to her chin to fingerprint markings around her wrist to bruises all over her back. And the child has stated to law enforcement, to Children's Services, to medical experts that this was done by her father.
But the thing that's so frustrating when I hear this, it's when I talk about the lack of coordination, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, it's that how is it that not one of the checks that we have in place to protect a child is being activated? I mean, it's kind of one thing to say, okay, the investigators, you know, haven't done what they're supposed to do, but thank goodness DCFS is there. And it's like, it's which agency is, you know, screwing it up more and endangering this kid more? It's really frustrating that the benefit of the doubt and the benefit of anything never is for the best interest of the child.
Yeah, you know, that is so true. It's the checks and balances aren't working here. Kathy, tell us about the rally that the NOW rally that's being organized to release Cherish Lewis and protect your child.
Yeah, I have spoken with the Ohio chapter of NOW, and they are orchestrating a Free Cherish Lewis and Protect Her Child NOW rally. So if anyone is interested in participating in the rally, either by directly attending or providing other types of support and assistance, they are welcome to contact the NOW Ohio president, give them a call, email them. They are definitely looking for towards getting back into the grassroots street-type rallying in order to stop these injustices that so frequently happen to women and children across the United States in situations like this.
Absolutely. And that email address is OhioNow, OhioNow, at msn.com, or call 330-336-2578. I'll give you both each a minute here to finish up. Start with you, Kathy. The Justice League of Ohio, obviously you're helping with this case. What else do you do? Just share with my listeners.
Well, we are a victims' rights legal clinic, so we assist victims of violent crime when they feel that their statutory or constitutional rights are being violated throughout the criminal justice process. So when we took on this case, it was obviously apparent that this child's rights are most certainly being violated by law enforcement officials that are refusing to do proper and thorough investigations. And then, again, flowing over into the domestic relations court, who is not properly considering or hearing and weighting the evidence and determining the best interest of the child. Now, we are one of 10 states in the country that have victims' rights legal clinics, and we provide assistance, you know, in a variety of areas, everything from stalking to homicide, to ensure that crime victims' rights are upheld throughout the criminal justice process. It's a sort of new and novel notion, right, that victims of crime have rights and that those rights should be zealously protected, as the theme is defendants.
And you, Robin, has the system failed mother?
You know, and the connection here between us, it should be obvious, is that with Justice Interrupted and giving a voice through, you know, the avenues that I can, and listening to these cases that happen every place that are not understood as we do on Justice Interrupted, Stacey Dietrich and I, and this case and the many others that Kathy is involved in that are just, you know, true examples of things that happen all over the place where the system fails in a variety of areas. And so together we're dangerous, or we hope to be, and to make it so that people actually listen and start making sure that we're protecting our children.
Absolutely, and I'll give more details on the Now rally after we finish up. Kathy, Robin, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that's Kathy Harper Lee from the Justice League of Ohio, and again, the Ohio chapter of Now is organizing a Release Cherish Lewis and Protect Your Child Now rally. If individuals are interested in participating in the Now rally, either by directly attending or signing a petition or providing other types of support and assistance, please contact Now Ohio. The president is Diane Dodge, and you can email her at ohionow@msn.com. Or call her 330-336-2578. Again, the Ohio chapter of Now is organizing a Release Cherish Lewis and Protect Your Child Now rally. It looks like the evidence is supporting mom, and let's get her out of jail. Let's protect the child. That's the most important thing, is protecting that child and getting the true story out there about what really happened. That's it. That's tonight's show. Thank you for listening. Our webpage is scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, listen to podcasts of past shows, my daily commentary, leave comments, whatever you want to do. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.